Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that has been known to have a discussion or two about the Legend of Heroes series. I am your host and honorary bracer in training, David Lloyd, and in this episode we have a spoiler-free discussion about the final installment of the Trails of Cold Steel series, and a conversation at large about why the Legend of Heroes is a must-play RPG franchise. Tonight I'm joined by a pair of scholarly figures, starting with the English professor whose education lead heavily on RPGs, Jordan Rudick.
I'm still going to credit my love of language and reading, and RPGs especially, to the original Final Fantasy. I loved that game. I loved the strategy guide that came with it. I was obsessed with it. I showed it off to friends. No one really wanted to play it with me, but my dad and I kind of played together. And so, the education started there. It hasn't stopped since.
So I guess you would owe a debt of gratitude to whoever localized that particular game then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, and there's a lot of, there's just so much text in there, and I'm reading it as like a 5 or 6 year old or something like that, and maybe I'm not understanding everything, but at least I'm getting interested in games that are text heavy, and you do have to read a lot to get anywhere in the game. So maybe I'm asking my dad, what does this mean, or where do I go next? I can't understand what the plot is here or anything like that, but it started there, and obviously we've talked about so many Final Fantasy games since, and maybe we'll be looking back at all these Legend of Heroes games that we've already played and are going to play more. And I don't know what the next game is coming to the West. Has that even been announced yet? I know there's new games in the series, but
nope.
Still waiting on Haljimari or whatever, Trails of Genesis or
Hajimari no Kiseki.
Okay.
Yep. And we have a new guest to the Mage first time on. It's the professor of the RPG University himself, Scott White.
Howdy, everybody. Thanks for having me here at the Thirsty Mage.
Well, thanks for coming.
Looking forward to talking some Cold Steel goodness.
Yeah, it's always good to get a Trails fan on here. I know Casey's working on, he started Trails of Cold Steel 1, actually, this week. So I'm sure he'll be hooked into the cult any day now. But we got a lot of Trails of Cold Steel, more Legend of Heroes fans in the old Patreon. So they'll be happy to know that We've sought out a guest with high knowledge of the series.
I'm surprised our Discord general chat hasn't just devolved into a Legend of Heroes general chat. Like, that's what it should be, it feels like. But, yeah, it's good.
It's on its way. Those are the sub-chats. If you go into the Trails in the Sky right now, there's a couple of us playing Second Chapter.
That one's always popping off whenever I look in.
Yeah, that's right.
Very nice, very nice.
Well, Scott, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and your RPG history and your own podcast, The RPG University?
Sure. For me, my first memory I ever have, like the oldest memory I have, is me trying to play Dragon Quest when I was like really, really little and not being able to get out of the initial throne room because I couldn't read yet. But I absolutely love RPGs. They are my favorite genre, followed closely by fighting games, but Western RPGs, tactical RPGs, Japanese RPGs, especially tabletop RPGs, I just love them all. So I've been playing them for years and years, and I just can't get enough talking about them, and I always look forward to trying new games or falling in love with new series, which Trails in the Sky and Trails of Cold Steel and the Legend of Heroes series was one of those kind of newer ones I fell in love with a couple years ago. But for my podcast, RPG University, basically the general gist, the premise of each episode is I sit down with a special guest and we just nerd out about a single RPG that we both love, and we share memories that have been sent in by other fans of the game. We share those along with giving kind of tips and tricks to new players who might be interested in playing the specific game for the first time, along with where they can find it, and yeah, each episode starts off with a fun little dubbed scene from the game that the guest picks, and it's just it's a good old nerd out time talking about games we love. So that's RPG University in a nutshell.
I had I'd listened to the Earthbound episode maybe a week ago or so, and I really enjoyed that. I feel like you have a really kind of lighthearted and nice discussion about these games, and yeah, it was felt like a good I mean obviously you guys are doing at the RPG University, you're doing something very similar to what we do, although we don't do as many deep dive episodes anymore, I'd say mostly because we don't have as much time to devote to all these different RPGs. But when we do an episode like this one, or like we're going to do a Tales of Vesperia episode coming up, Persona 4 Golden, for example. I feel like it takes on a very kind of similar format to what you do at the RPG University. So anyone listening to our podcast today, you know, if you like this kind of content, Scott's doing a very similar thing at the RPG University, so you can check him out there.
Yeah. And just a heads up, I have actually sat down and recorded with Sean Shiplock, the voice actor of Rean himself from Trails of Cold Steel, for a couple episodes. So you can enjoy those as well.
Oh, that'd be pretty neat. I recently listened to the Final Fantasy XII episode, and it brought back memories of when I first bought that at launch. And I know my opinions of the game have changed radically from when I first bought it, now that I'm a little bit older and kind of a little bit better, I guess, or a little bit more patient or whatever. But I remember at the time buying Final Fantasy XII and being upset at the departure from the general formula. And also being upset that there was no random encounters anymore, that all the enemies were on the... it's, I guess, as whatever I was, 14 or 15 when it came out, I guess. I know David at that age was not all that good with change, I guess.
I mean, that whole switch to especially no random encounters, that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a big deal. I mean, 12 was the first big departure outside of 11 being an MMO that the series had seen, so there was a lot of pushback with it. But sitting down and talking to Michaela was so much fun. I absolutely love 12, but you guys know that. But yeah.
And 12 is funny. Here we are talking our Trails of Cold Steel 4 episode. We're going to go on a fuzzy 12 tangent, but that's okay. We're all about tangents here.
Yep.
David, I was the same as you. Like, when I first played Final Fantasy 12 on PS2, I couldn't get into it. It was too much of a departure, too different. And then coming to the, I guess I probably played it on PS4 or whenever the Zodiac Edition first came here, I played that version. Yeah, the changes really, I thought, made it closer in line to what I wanted out of an RPG. And obviously, it had the speed up functions, which I absolutely live for. And I to bring it back to Trails of Cold Steel 4, I had the speed up option on the whole time, pretty much, just because that was the only way I was going to finish this game for review. So yeah, I love those features in RPGs. But yeah, you and I both had very 180 degree changes in our feelings about FF12. So that was kind of funny.
Yep. But before we get too far, I just want to remind everyone that if you do enjoy this episode or this show in particular, we'd love if you could help us out by telling a friend or, two or three about the podcast, or sharing it with the world at large on Twitter about how much you love the show. You can also help us out financially by subscribing through Patreon and getting all the rewards and benefits that come with that, or leaving a tip on Ko-Fi. We're actually going to be recording our first exclusive episode of the Patreon this week. So if you you get in when you hear this, there should be one up and available on Patreon, the very first one. It's going to be on the video games that we first got as kids and how they shaped our tastes in video games as adults. So that's coming up.
And just to confirm, like the same, you know, the same weekly episodes still be available to everybody. That's not going away.
Yeah.
Patrons still get early access to that. But the Patreon exclusive episode, that is a bonus, an extra episode added in that is exclusive to supporters of the site.
Yeah, at any tier level as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jordan, I noticed on Twitter today that you did get the Oreo package in the mail, but I think you have a little bit of news ahead of that, though, about a particular test that you had taken.
I don't even know if I can do all of it today. Like, it's just too much of a news drop.
Well, you
and
just
I don't
pick
want
one,
to
sca- you pick the
I don't
one
want then. To scare Scott off of joining us on the podcast again. So what I'll do is I'll save the... The two things I was going to talk about food wise, you know, they kind of contradict each other. So I'll save one for next week.
Okay.
I'll talk about the food sensitivity test results next week. But I did. And I posted a picture on Twitter of the four Oreos that I imported. They're not, at least if they're sold in Canada, they're hard to get. But I think they are imported from the States. So I got the the Brookios, which are like brownie Oreo cookies, the hazelnut flavor, the strawberry donut flavor, and the Lady Gaga Oreo flavor, which apparently is just the golden Oreo, but with different colors. So we'll see how that goes. But so, yeah, I do have a review of one of these. I opened up one first, and this is the one of the four I was the most excited to try out, actually, and that was the Brookio. They're a little bit thicker. They're almost, in terms of cream in the middle, they're almost like a double stuff thickness, because they've got, actually, and I didn't realize this, they have three different creams in the middle. They've got a thin layer of the white normal Oreo cookie cream. They've got like a what looks like a cookie dough kind of cream on the top. And then underneath, they've got, like, I guess, which is just a chocolate or a dark chocolate cream as well. So I didn't realize that I had the three creams in the middle. So that's kind of nice. These are good. The flavor is really good. It does kind of remind me of like a cookie brownie kind of thing, which I've definitely had before and enjoy. The flavor, yeah, these are very sweet. Again, can't have too many of these. And I say that probably, you know, I've already had four today. and definitely feeling the after effects of that. But yeah, these are really good. I'm going to regret the fact that I've tried these and now can't find them in Canada at a normal price. I had to import these for about three or four times the normal cost of Oreos in my store. So that's going to be a little unfortunate or a little bittersweet, I suppose. But yeah, the Brookio, very good. Definitely probably a top three for me right now, right up there with birthday cake. It's not too much icing because even the cookie feels a little thicker on these. I feel like in the package, I'm not getting as many, and I don't know if the alignment of the package is because of the cookie itself or because these are from the States as opposed to produced in Canada. I don't know, but definitely two thumbs up for me. But getting back on the Oreo horse for a little while, the Brookios, I would recommend trying them. They're quite tasty.
I'm just double checking the ingredients, but it looks like these are still vegan as well.
They're still dairy free. Yeah. I know they have. And, you know, that kind of will lead into or segue into our discussion next week about the food sensitivity test. There are still a lot of things in these things that in these cookies that I shouldn't be having, but maybe
like
in moderation.
Palm oil or the corn syrup or maybe the processed cocoa.
Yeah. So cocoa was
caramelized
just sugar. A little bit of a tease for next week. The cocoa or chocolate was my highest food sensitivity result. Yeah, it was the worst one. It's the worst culprit of, I guess, my stomach woes. So Scott doesn't know, but I've got lactose intolerance. I've got a lot of things that caffeine and other things I thought were bothering me. So I finally did a food sensitivity test.
Now cocoa intolerance.
And it turns out that there's even more things I can't have. So,
wow.
Yeah, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and I'll save that for next week, though.
Yeah. And Scott, I don't know if you're drinking a beer now, but I was going to ask if there's any particular food or drink that you've been deprived of maybe during the current COVID incident and maybe that you're looking forward to getting back to one day.
I guess like I'm really in the mood for my fiance as well. We're in the mood for like Korean barbecue.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Korean barbecue is very good. But like going to a Korean place and grilling in the open with everyone around you. We've avoided it, so we're looking forward to that, I would say.
Yeah, that's definitely not a COVID-friendly activity, but man, I miss that too. We have gone to a couple Korean places, my wife and I, just the two of us, but not Korean barbecue, more just like they bring the dishes out to you. And it's not the same. Like, yeah. I really like that the whole barbecue experience, and you can kind of grill the meat as you like. And a lot of the places near me are all you can eat as well, so you can kind of just take your time and relax, and it's a lot of fun. But that I'm with you there. That's something we miss too.
Yeah, it's a light at the end of the tunnel in that regard as well. Hopefully mm-hmm. not too far off, but...
Scott, when you go for Korean barbecue, do you have any places around you where it's not just Korean barbecue, but they also do Japanese food as well, like sushi or teriyaki and stuff like that?
Yeah, we have a couple around me. But usually when we're in the mood for Korean barbecue, we'll go to like specific Korean barbecue spots. Gotcha. But if we want like bulgogi or bibimbap or something, we'll go to more of the... Korean Japanese mixture.
Gotcha. Okay.
Houses.
Right on.
Yeah, and for me, so I'm still working my way across the beer periodic table, and this week I'm at the Belgian Golden Ale. So this is a strong ale which has a bit of a fruity or complex nature to it, and again, it's you brewed with Belgian yeast, traditionally out of the Belgian area. This is a pale to copper color, so it's still on the lighter end, but now we're starting to get a little bit more towards the red area. This one has a bit of a higher IBU, typically between 20 and 50, so the people who can't stand the hop, we're starting to get into the territory where people fall off the wagon. Some of the more hoppy, there can be some more hoppier versions of this. However, the alcoholic content is back into my domain. It's between 7 and 11%. So this is the territory I'm more used to. And I actually had a recent Belgian Golden Ale from Delirium. It was recommended by one of our One of our esteemed Discord patrons, I guess, it was pretty good. And I think for popularity's sake, or maybe just easy to find, I think Duvel might be the maybe one of the more commercially available ones. Delirium was pretty easy to find, I think, but Duvel might be even more so. And they make a lot of the oak barrel aged beer that I enjoy. So anyone looking to try out one of the Belgian golden ales, Duvel or Delirium is a thumbs up for me.
I can't see the word golden right without thinking of golden rakshasa. That's how that's how ingrained Trails of Cold Steel is in my mind right now.
Yeah, I don't know. Have you breathed anything besides Cold Steel 4? I know you've been hammering through that game like nobody's business lately.
I feel like I went straight from Bravely Default 2 to Trails of Cold Steel 4, and I feel like I'm a wreck. Like, I'm an RPG wreck. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I need to take a break from playing an RPG for a week or two, you know, to get it out of my system for a bit and maybe chill out with some... I need some, like, relaxing games. Like, no brutal platformers, nothing hardcore. I need something like an Animal Crossing city builder or something like that. I don't know.
Before we get into the impressions, I just want to let the fans of the Trails series know that we are going to do our absolute best today to not spoil anything in Cold Steel 4. And I know some people are just trying to catch up in the series to this point, so just want to let you know you can enjoy the show. Well, you've got Trails veterans here who know what would ruin the whole spirit of the game. We will make sure not to do that for you. So having said that, maybe as the guest, Scott wants to kick off what he thought of Cold Steel 4 when he first played it on PlayStation 4.
I would say my biggest takeaway was, what a conclusion. Like, this game feels like the culmination of the nine games that came before it.
Yep.
Like, what it calls back to from earlier Cold Steel games, from the Trails in the Sky series, even the Crossbell games, like, everything that's mentioned and kind of referred to, it's beautiful. And that final scene, like, that the final, after the end credits have passed and it just says Trails of Cold Steel's over, like, I just, like, started bawling. Yeah. Like, this, it's just emotional. It was such an experience, and playing through this and seeing how everything had kind of tied up really impressed me. Like, this is this shared universe that Falcom has managed to create. I don't think any other developer has managed to create such an interwoven and well-done multi-game series. Like, I feel like Tetsuya Nomura wishes he could do this with Kingdom Hearts.
I think Kingdom Hearts is probably the closest thing. Like, we haven't really seen a franchise or a set of series of games try to integrate all these different characters and all these different storylines and take place in their own worlds and then bring it all together into a larger world. Like, Kingdom Hearts probably is the closest. I haven't really played Kingdom Hearts. I can't really speak to it, but the closest, you know, analogy for me would be Mass Effect. Like, Mass Effect, the characters carry through from 1 to 3, and you're seeing storylines pay off and what happens to races or species in the game can that you maybe actions you do towards one can have consequences later. But it still didn't feel as maybe expansive as it does in Cold Steel 4. Like, I've just finished my review today. I'm still trying to reconcile how I feel about this game. I do love it, and I do feel bittersweet that it's finished, but I think it requires this to really, really get it. And to really enjoy it, I think it requires this incredible investment that it probably is worth it. But if you haven't done it, I feel like something's missing.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised at just how much callbacks there are in 4. Like, even when you look at Cold Steel 3, like, there was definitely a lot of callbacks to previous games. But I feel like they were mostly just focusing on, like, 1 and 2. Like, it was mostly you were all the events that kind of happened in 1 and 2, you were kind of, I guess, like, trying not to spoil anything, but you're kind of seeing where things went, I guess, from those first two. But then Cold Steel 4 was like, no, we're just, it's everything. Everything's on the table. There could be anything. Like, this is definitely not spoiling it because this is how the game starts and everyone must know that these characters are in it. But Cold Steel 4 literally starts with the main protagonist of the Trails of the in the Sky and the main protagonist from Crossbell working together in a party for like the introductory
That's
fight.
It's a tutorial of the game. Is these characters you may have never met before or maybe came across in passing or something. Like it's
I know there's like a mention, like you kind of, there's a bit of a mention of the Crossbell arc. I guess there's a lot of Crossbell arc talk in Cold Steel 3, but you don't really, you don't see those characters. You don't interact with them and that sort of thing. But here, like you have Joshua, Estelle and Lloyd and Ren and they're all together and they're all fighting. And it's like you said, it's the tutorial. Like that's, if you haven't played anything but the Trails in Cold Steel, you might be surprised at like, I can't imagine you must know who they are, but you might not know the whole history. And I think that's what you were getting to, Jordan, with like, if you haven't played the previous games, you don't know everything that like Estelle and Joshua went through to get where they are now. You don't know what Lloyd went through in the Crossbell arc. Like it's just there's a whole context that's missing, and I still think you can thoroughly enjoy Cold Steel 4, and you can still end the game with this the same feeling that Scott had of like, you know, this just like, I can't believe it's over. It meant so much. Mm-hmm. It was so good. But yeah, I think, having played everything before that, you're definitely going to have a lot more tugs at the heartstrings while you're playing through the game.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on how accepting you are of knowledge gaps. Like how are you going to be okay if people talk about things in the game, maybe to a fair amount of detail that you don't know about, right? Or they mention events and they do like those little flashback images or cutscenes where they show like images of characters when they were younger and stuff. And you have no, you might have no, you know, background or ability to really process that. Like if you're okay with that, I think you're going to enjoy this game even more. But if it bothers you a little bit that you don't know things that characters are talking about, and I think I am in that camp. Like I've only played, I played Trails in the Sky first chapter a long time ago. I have played Cold Steel 1, but that was also a while ago too on my Vita. Didn't play 2, played 3. On Switch, but you know, ran through it as fast as I could for a review. Like I don't know that I was in the best place to get as much out of this game as is offered. It really is staggering how much you are provided with in this game if you're prepared to accept it. If you really haven't made that investment, it is paid off in spades. But gosh, it is hundreds of hours of game time you're maybe asked to go through to really soak up everything, all the kind of gory detail that happens here. And I as much as I admire Falcom for what they've done, like it is also in a way limiting, right, to the people that'll really, you know, get the most out of this. So it's like a catch-22, right? Like you can't, I understand you can't have both of those things. You can't have all these narrative and character payoffs but also like a game that's fully accessible to everybody. Like it just doesn't really happen. So and then the Switch problem compounds it, of the fact that, you know, only two of these 8 or 9 games are actually on the console. Some of them aren't even localized in, legally localized, I suppose, for consumption in the West. So, man, what a complex, convoluted problem to solve. I don't know how to, again, that's why I'm stuck at this kind of crossroads, I suppose.
Yeah, we were talking like just before the show about this particular issue, and I know Scott, you had mentioned that. Like, you had played everything pretty much except one of the Crossbells leading up to this. And I guess you're of the opinion that, of the same as Jordan, where playing the original, or playing up at all everything that came before it is definitely worthwhile, in your opinion.
I think, because I initially got started with Trails of Cold Steel. I have the original one on PS3 and Vita. I picked that up, but I really kind of bounced off of it the first time I played it. And it wasn't until the Relentless Edition, or like the PS4 versions that released a few years back, that I was reviewing, that I kind of pushed through kind of the repetition that had kind of gotten me down. And some of the characters in Class 7, like their dynamics were kind of grating on me, but it all ended up paying off and I fell in love with all of them. But So I played Cold Steel 1, 2, and then 3. And it wasn't until I played through Cold Steel 3 did I realize that I really wish I had played the Sky games before I had played Cold Steel 3. So after I beat that and leading up to Cold Steel 4, I went back and played through Trails in the Sky, FC, second chapter, the third, and then Trails from Zero, the Crossbell game leading up to Trails of Cold Steel 4. And I'm so, so glad I did. It's, I think you're okay if you just play the Cold Steel games. I think if you start with Cold Steel 3, like you said, you'll miss out on a lot of stuff. But to really, if you go into Cold Steel 4, having played as many of the games you can, as to have played the Trails in the Sky games especially, it's like you have such an immense payoff with what happens in Cold Steel 4 that I think it is the best way to experience that game. Granted, it is difficult. It is a giant time commitment. But I do wholeheartedly think that it pays off in the end.
Yeah, and it's even tougher these days to play those games because with the PS Vita store being axed, that's just like one last place to be able to get these games because that's where my first game, Trails in the Sky, the first time I played it, I actually played it on Vita. And that was my first experience in the series. And then after playing the Cold Steel series, I ended up going back to second chapter, which I'm finishing up now. And I've already bought like third and Trails of Zero, I guess, or Trails 2-0, whatever it's called. But now I'm actually doing it through Steam because I think that's probably the only place you can get it now, at least the Trails in the Sky trilogy. And then even Trails from Zero, you can't even get from Steam because technically you have to get it through, the way I ended up getting it was through Geofront. You have to buy like a digital version of the game through a Japanese like DL site, I think it's called. And then, and even that's a little tricky because I don't think DL site is in English, if I recall correctly. So I think I was like looking at Geofront had like set up pictures of like, well, when you see this symbol, hit this and hit this. And it's why you're kind of just, I was going on faith at that point that like, I was hitting the right buttons and my Visa wasn't going to get charged a couple $1,000, but it all ended up working out. And there's a patch from Geofront that you apply to it after you've purchased it and after you've downloaded it. And that ended up working perfectly. As far as I know, I played a couple hours in just to make sure it worked, but it's that one's coming up. But yeah, it's definitely, I guess we'll get into more about the old games in Last Call, but it's definitely a tricky way of trying to get back and play some of these games, even though it's, like you said, it's definitely worth it. One of the things that I found interesting about Trails of Cold Steel 4 and 3, actually, was that the way, so with the four games, you can almost split it into two in a certain sense, where Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2 focus on, like you said, Class 7, and then 3 and 4 are later on in the timeline, and there's a new Class 7, but there's a very mirroring that I find of the actual games itself, like when you look at the way they're structured. Because I ended up finding like so Cold Steel 1 and Cold Steel 3 are very similar in the sense of you have this kind of linear, very structured way of going through the story. And then in Cold Steel 2, they kind of open it up and open it up in a lot of sense, actually, in that you're not as structured on where you have to go and who you have to use. And I found that wonderful about Cold Steel 4 because it focuses on the same thing where it's a little more open, you get a little more freedom. And I was almost paralyzed by choice of who I could actually use going out into Erebonia and saving the world.
It's a lot of characters. Yeah. Oh my gosh, what a cast. And so many of them are playable too.
And it only gets crazier in Hajimari because, funny enough, the past two Christmases, my future in-laws imported me Cold Steel 4 from Japan before it released here. And also, this past Christmas, they imported me Hajimari no Kiseki. So I've been playing and messing around with the future game. And I'm hoping that once Cold Steel releases this week on Switch, they will shift and then announce Hajimari's localization. I feel like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'd like to see that too. Some of the Crossbell games are coming to Steam, I guess, localized versions this summer as well. So, like, things are happening. Seems like it's sometimes
where'd
a slow
process.
Where'd
you hear
process. That? I'm looking on
localized.
The Steam page right now.
They're not localized.
Oh, those aren't localized?
No, those are coming, but they're only in Japanese. They're not localized.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so weird. Okay, sorry. So I stand corrected then.
Yeah, Geofront actually made an announcement that because they localized Zero and they have finished localizing Azure, but they haven't done all the, like, they're still beta testing, I guess. Like, they're just getting all the bugs out, and it should be available soonish. Like, the kind of official is just it'll be done when it's done. But like the actual localization part is done. They're just kind of optimizing it at this point. But they did say that even though Steam is releasing Japanese versions of the of both, their localization can't be applied to it. It's not going to work. Like there's this weird thing with Azure where you have to buy it from a Chinese website and then download it and then apply the localization. So I'm hoping they make it easy again, like they did with the first one. Because I actually tried to buy the Azure a little while ago and the link was broken. So hopefully when that's all officially like figured out, it'll be easy enough for us just to go in and get that.
That is so weird.
David, I want to return to your suggestion about the Cold Steel games kind of being parallel with one another, how one and three are more structured. I think I prefer that more structured storyline, the fact that you are in like a set place and there's only a couple of areas you can visit. And then once you're done there, you go back home. I kind of like that a little bit more. I guess that's maybe more my style compared to Chosen Cold Steel 4, where you can kind of go everywhere, right? Like the fast travel options around the map are kind of staggering a little bit. And with so many things to collect and people to talk to, it is, there's a ton of, obviously there's a lot of stuff to do if you want to do it, but it's a little daunting.
Yeah, one of my biggest worries too, when you get, like with Trails of Cold Steel 4, you have all of these characters that are available to you and you can only take so many of them. I always get worried about, like, you start leaning into certain characters because, like, we all have our favorites, obviously, and especially if you have, there's so many different ways you can play with the battle system, which we'll get into in a little bit, but you can kind of get accustomed to characters, and I always get worried, like, okay, at some point, somebody's going to have to go off and go somewhere, or at some point, they're going to be like, oh, well, actually, like, we're going to this particular area that maybe a certain character, you know, has to specifically be in, and that always got, like, was in the back of my mind when I kept sticking to the same people every time. Because, I would just stick to a particular party. But thankfully, like, I feel like it's open, but it's not forcefully. Like, if you do want to kind of specialize, you're not punished late in the game for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Funny enough, I actually discovered a near infinite combo with a magic user where you can just make it so enemies never take a turn and you just destroy them with magic spells. I call it my Emma engine, and it's glorious.
I've noticed that with Emma on a couple, there's a few different fights. I think it was in Cold Steel 3. If you, with Emma, like when you're fighting McBurn, if you set up to use her ability that basically makes you can't use magic on the party, you can beat McBurn without actually taking a hit. So there's a few different ways that you can really break that system. And I guess we can get into it now, but to me, the trails, one of the things about Trails of Cold Steel is that I think it's the best turn-based combat system that's available. Like, you know, I've always really enjoyed Final Fantasy, like, my entire life, but coming into the trails, like, it started in Trails of Sky, and you can see, like, every game, they just add a little bit more, you know, they add a little bit more, a little bit more. I know in Trails in the Sky, I feel like there was more focus on arts. Like, they just seemed to be a little bit more powerful CP attacks or uses, I found them more utility than actual, like, taking out characters. Especially the final boss in Trails in the Sky is pretty much like there's a specific combination of magic that you have to do really to get past them. So I feel like those series kind of focus more on the magic, but in Trails of Cold Steel, I feel like there's a lot more focused on CP, and you can especially create, like, when you're looking at equipment and stuff, like, you can really create some near indestructible characters with, like, that either have, like, high evade stats, or they have, like, CP replenishment to the point where, like, you're almost doing S-craft attack. I just really enjoy how much detail and how much, openness, or just how much you could play with that system. And it just never got boring for me.
So here's my problem with Cold Steel 4. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that, like, you don't start at level 1, right? Like, this is the fourth game in the series. They had to come up with some mechanic or explanation for why you don't start at level 1, and you don't. And so you start off the game with abilities, pretty much, or very early on. And I found that I was getting through a lot of battles just by putting on an order, like an order to increase damage by 20 or 30 or 60%, and then using my four S-crafts. And then most battles would be done or almost done. Like, I guess I didn't feel like I needed to use a lot of variety to win combat scenarios. And maybe that's because I've played a bunch of these games before. But anyone who plays this game is probably going to be in that same boat of having played these games before and being very comfortable with the combat system. I almost wish there were more wrinkles, or I wish they did something a little bit different with it. It's the same combat system as Cold Steel 3, which is a good one, but these are so many hours and so many battles you fought using the same kind of strategies. Like, I like arts. I like the crafts and the S-crafts. I think adding the orders in the previous game was clever. But I found that I was just using the same kind of strategy to get through. And maybe that's because I was kind of on a deadline and I was trying to get through it fast. But, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, if I can just choose an order and keep my, and then go into a battle with full CP, like, I would go to an inn regularly or go into a shower or the hot springs to refill my CP. And then every time I would get into a boss fight, it would be the same kind of song and dance. I don't know if it would. Did you guys have the same experience?
I'm going to ask you a question, but it's not accusational.
Can we start with Scott then?
What difficulty level were you on?
Well, normal.
Okay, because...
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. I always play games on normal unless I need
me
to...
Me too, but...
Unless I need to go down for speed reasons, but...
I think having played... Now that I've played so many and I've played them on the different difficulty levels, I really feel like normal is for someone who hasn't played it yet. And the next step up, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's just difficult and nightmare.
Hard. I think it's just hard.
Like, the next one up to me is, like, you've played this game before, you should play this difficulty level. And then nightmare is for, like, the people who really want to, like, punish themselves.
Yeah.
Nightmare is New Game Plus.
Yeah. There is New Game Plus as
I would agree with you to an extent. I think popping a, like, strength-enhancing order and then just S-crafting bosses works for a while. Mm-hmm. I think probably past the point where you... I think that's when it's not quite as a sure thing. I think it'll definitely still do a bunch of damage, but I don't think it's a for sure thing. Mm-hmm. Because after you use all your S-crafts, you're left with a huge delay on all your characters, and you can get hit pretty hard, especially in the multi-fights. So
I'll tell you what I did after I got... I added on to this strategy a little bit, and maybe this is where the strategizing comes in, and, you know, being an RPG veteran, it didn't take too long to figure this out. What I would also do is, before I'd put the order in, I'd raise everyone's strength, so I'd cast, like, I think it's Forte, or Forte 2, or something like that, or Forte R, to raise everyone's strength by, like, a medium or large amount, and then... After I would use the S-crafts, I would put the heat up orbment or the heat up art on a couple of my characters, so they would just be refreshing the CP. But one thing I forgot was the master orbs, I think they're called, or master orbment. I think it's called Minotaurus or Minotaurus, mm-hmm. something like that. It increases your damage by like 70 to 80%, and as it levels up, that percentage gets even higher. So if you put that as your sub-orb, I guess we're getting into the weeds a little bit. If you put that as your sub-orb on all of your characters and everyone's doing plus 80% damage and all that stuff stacks, even after I got... I'm still using the strategy. I would say up to like the final maybe 25% of the game or so, it was still working pretty well. And then some of the final fights, like I didn't have trouble at all just using that same kind of game plan. I don't know. Like I mean, Dave, you're right. Maybe I do need to put up the difficulty, but like I don't know. I feel like I needed a little bit more variety that I was getting from previous games, maybe.
Yeah, one of the thing I found with the battles, especially when I replayed 3, was that there seemed to be an opportunity to kind of wreck a boss early. Like you have that opportunity to kind of go in with like max CP, and if you can kind of take them out very quickly, then you know it makes the boss fights easy. But like playing on the higher difficulty, like what it does is the higher difficulty actually adds HP to the bosses. So what I would find is, or what I actually ended up finding when I played 3 again, was my initial strategy of just going in and wrecking them very quickly, quickly fell apart because most of the bosses, especially like the Magic Knights, if you don't finish them off, like before they have a turn, all of a sudden they'll do their enhance and then gain back half their HP.
Yeah, those fights are really good. I enjoyed those throughout the game. I think those are like a clear standout. I like them in the third game. I think I like them even better here, just with the number of times you had like multiple Divine Knights or Panzer Soldats on your side as well. Like it was, and then you have your individual partners and they've got their spells. Like it's simpler in some ways because you don't have as many arts or abilities to choose from. But I really like that. I really like the Divine Knight fights.
As someone who's played a lot of the Trails combat or games, I guess, Scott, have you enjoyed how complex it's gotten from Trails in the Sky, or are you more of a traditionalist? And because I know a lot of people, they'll start with Sky and then they'll get to the Cold Steel and be like, "Nah, this is they've done too much here. There's too much to think about now."
No, I think, and maybe it's because I started really with Cold Steel and then went back to the Sky games to play through those, but I really enjoyed being able to see how the systems kind of evolved and got to where they eventually ended up with Cold Steel 4. I think there's also a lot of complexity. I think the magic system's a lot more complex in the Sky games than they are in the Cold Steel games. I think I honestly think they simplified a good number of things in Cold Steel when compared to how things worked in the Sky games. Cold Steel felt very much like the materia system, where the Sky games, it was much more about equipping the right quartzes that would give you enough of certain elements to then give you access to specific spells. Whereas in Cold Steel, it was just like you equip the spell and you had it. So I never felt that Cold Steel games were overly complex. I think I always looked at it more of, there's a lot of variety and choice you can really sink into how you want to make your party and individual characters in the Cold Steel games, which I very much appreciate.
Is it wrong to say that in the Sky games, because it's been a long time and I've only played the first one, like positioning felt like more important than it does here? Like I'm not usually moving characters around in Cold Steel to avoid attacks, for example, or that I necessarily need to get into position to do something. I feel like most of your spells will hit the targets they need to, or you've got enough range on them from wherever you are. But in Trails in the Sky, I felt like I had to be better at moving my characters around to either avoid damage or inflict damage. Is that a fair assessment?
I don't know if I really felt I moved characters around more in the Sky games. I think it might feel that way because it strikes me more as a tactical grid-based system. So maybe that gives the illusion of it, whereas Cold Steel, it's kind of just like an open arena circle that you can move around.
That could be, yeah.
I think Trails in the Sky had a bigger... I agree with you in the sense that, like, when you're playing Trails in the Sky, like, you see the grid when you go to move, whereas you don't see that in Cold Steel. But I think the characters in relation to the size of the arena, I feel like the arena was bigger in Sky. So they're... I guess there's the opportunity to do more movement if that was kind of what you were wanting to do. Because I mm-hmm. I know in a couple of cases, like for me, and especially in second chapter, was that I did employ moving my characters as far away in a couple of cases where, like, I know there's certain enemies in second chapter where they don't move as quickly and they primarily use physical. So it was almost like this, I don't know, rabbit and the wolf where I'm like running away. I'll shoot a magic. I'll run away again, trying to like wear them down. So, but yeah, like, I guess it's maybe not as much. It's something you would notice, I think, if you played a lot of the games, but it's very nuanced, I guess. Like, it's, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's a big gap between the two.
So maybe then just calling it an evolution isn't entirely fair. Like, they're different, or they have their own merits or strategies to them, I guess.
Yeah, like, I definitely agree with Scott in the sense that I really think Sky, its focus was really on the magic part. Because, like you said, when you're filling up your orbment, it's not a matter of, like you said, when you're using kind of the materia style and cold steel, like, it doesn't really matter where you put the materia, like, as long as, or the quartz, because as long as it's there, like, you get the ability. Whereas, yeah, in Sky, like, you're trying to, you have to, like, pay attention to where the lines are, and you have to make sure that there's, like, enough of, like, if you want certain, like, health, like, if you want Thelius, or however you pronounce it, like, to be able to revive someone, like, you have to have so many water quartz in your orbment to be able to even do the ability. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the, I feel like a lot of the enemies are, like, there's a lot more, I seem like I focused more on elemental weaknesses in the Sky Trilogy than I really was worrying about in Trails of Cold Steel. Like, it didn't seem like you really had to worry about, oh, well, that guy's weak to water, so I better use a water attack. Like, I don't feel like I was thinking mm-hmm. about that as much in Cold Steel. It was more, I was more focused on, like, okay, how do I, you know, manipulate my CP between the different characters, or how do I use the battle orders to change it. And I guess the other thing, the other big difference between Cold Steel is that they brought in the break system, where in, like, Cold Steel 3 and 4, it's not even so much about health as much as, okay, I need to break the opponent so that they're temporarily can't attack, and then you can hit them for bigger damage. So there was more strategy in trying to break an opponent as well as just taking them out health-wise.
Mm-hmm. I felt in Cold Steel I was much more concerned and geared my characters towards inflicting status effects than I was hitting elemental weaknesses.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I know there's a few of those, like the cryptids, I felt like there was certain status, like, and even worrying about status effects on my end too. Like, there were certain cryptids mm-hmm. that did certain attacks. There was like, okay, make sure, like, you know, character A, B, C, and D all have, like, this thing so that you're not getting, like, knocked out or confused or something.
Confusion is just right. Brutal. When one of your characters is confused and they're attacking their own team, like, it's great when it's the enemy team doing it, but when it's happening to you, like, if, you know, God help you, if Rain gets confused and he starts wailing on your other team, on his teammates, it's pretty devastating. I was very quick to end up equipping some accessories to prevent confusion, because I found that one the most devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just before we get into the final topic we're going to talk about, without, I guess it doesn't really spoil anything if we talk just briefly about the characters. I'm just curious what everyone's preferred character party is, in the sense of which character, which I guess we could restrict it to four to make it a little bit easier, because we could go on forever. But is there like a go-to four that you guys had that you're like, you know, if I had my choice of anybody, these are the four that I was usually walking into a fight with?
For me, in Cold Steel, it was Rean, Alyssa, Emma, and usually Kurt. Those were usually my main four.
I had a lot of fun choosing, like, new characters, so I won't speak to them too much, but, like, what I would find is, like, the new characters that would join me would be a higher level, and I'd be like, oh, I want to choose the higher level characters, because that'll make me stronger, and maybe that's because I didn't feel like I was grinding very much in the game at all, unless I was just trying to get CP back, but, Yeah, I liked using some of the newer characters, so characters that like would appear in earlier games that if they came forward, you were able to play as them in this one. I would take a bunch of those. But Rin was like my number one. Like I love him, and I think his abilities, his crafts are really, really strong.
Yeah, for me, it changed quite a bit from like because I started on 3 before playing 1 and 2, I had more affinity to the new Class 7 than I did the old Class 7. But then going back and playing 1 and 2, like I really developed a lot of strategies with the old people. So Alyssa was definitely always in every party that I ever done, just because like she was my healer. And her Master Orb would let her, like, I believe I could, she would revive twice when you get to a certain, mm-hmm. when you got her to a certain point, like, she could die twice and still be alive. So I liked having her in case, like, I got, my whole party gets wrecked by a boss. I know she's at least going to get up, and then I could do a Sapphic Ring to revive everybody, like, worst case.
Sapphic Ring is my favorite spell.
Yeah.
It is so broken. Just to bring everybody back. It feels like it should be a Megalixir one use item that you can't keep using. But I put Sapphic Ring on like every one of my characters at some point. Because it's just so useful.
And it does even more too, because not only does it bring everyone back to 100%, but it gives them a regen for like three turns, I think.
I don't even think I noticed that. Like maybe that's, is it possible that's like a Sapphic Ring R, like a higher level one? I don't know, but I used my I don't know if it's which material it was to make those, but every time I had like over 1,000, I would craft one of those ornaments and make sure a character's got one of those going in.
Yeah, and pair that with Reen's I can't remember which battle order he has, but it instantly will give it will. Make all casts you do for 6 turns instant.
You just instantly
cast a full cure.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I definitely use that order a bunch when I in some of the later battles where I wasn't just doing massive damage. I felt like it was going to be a longer fight. Yeah, the ability to cast spells instantly. Like that was probably the zero arts like little bonus that comes up on the turn order. That's probably my favorite one, because then you can just go ham, like summon. I was going to say something, but I think it might be a spoiler, so I won't. But like just being able to use any of the massive big spells, like the 500 EP spells at on a single turn is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that battle orders were a lot of the reasons why I was going with certain characters too, because the other two characters I usually have in my party were Yuna. Because I liked that the sledgehammer, so that I could get out to a fast start by breaking opponents. And the other one was Altina, using Ebon's Crest, because it was basically like a get-out-of-jail-free card, where you just use Ebon's Crest and you're fine for like 3 or 4 turns. So I tend to, when you're kind of in a fight with a bunch of characters, like let's say you're taking on like 6 or 7 enemies, I would just wait until like my characters are fast enough where it'd be like, okay, we get the first couple in, and all of a sudden like you look at the timeline and there's like 7 enemies in a row about to wreck you. So they're like, okay, I'll just use Ebon's Crest on like the final character of mine that goes, and then it basically I take no damage for all of those 7, and then maybe even a couple more after that, because I think Ebon's Crest was either 4 or 5 turns. And then you could even, I found a trick where technically the Ebon's Crest doesn't employ a turn if you use an art until you've actually used the art. So if you had like 1 or 2 left, then I could use an art and then that would put me behind the opponent. And then that would give me an extra turn where I'm invincible and then the art would hit.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, there's a lot of that kind of manipulation of turn order that you can do to your advantage. So again, maybe that is just one of the benefits of playing a bunch of these games. You figure those little tricks out, and it does make things easier. I meant to mention that I did have Laura in my party a lot. Although, and I should mention this, her voice actress, I think, is one of the first, or one of the only ones that changed, or one of the main, certainly one of the main characters that changed from previous games. And it's a little jarring, like, to hear one voice for 3 games, and then for it to be a different one in the 4th one was a little bit odd. It was too bad. I think there was, like, a schedule conflict or something, they couldn't bring her back. But I used her a lot because one of her orders was just add 60% damage. I'm like, yep, I'm just going straight damage. So I'll take Laura in my party pretty often, or at least in the support party. So if I'm not using her, I can still use her orders.
Mm-hmm.
So before we move on to Last Call, I just wanted to briefly touch on one last thing, which is the length of time it takes to play these games. I think one of the hallmarks of any game, I've noticed it in Sky, the Trails in the Sky as well, is that whenever you think you're at the end of a Trails game, you're probably not that close to the end of the Trails game. And a lot of them can get on pretty long. I know I was looking at my final time on Cold Steel 4, and I had I was just under 70 hours. And even then, it was for a review, so I felt like I was rushing through the game. And I think I did pretty much all of the side quests. I don't recall missing any, but even then, it's still, like, I still felt like I was rushing through the game. Like, I wasn't savoring as much as I would have if I had just purchased it myself. But is 70 hours pushing it for RPGs these days, just with the way that, you know, everything's kind of, you know, we have a whole lot less time than we used to, but is 70 hours still a good time for you guys?
A game has to really be special to warrant that long of a playtime, in my opinion. Like, if I stick with a game that long, then I think it's worth that long. Then I think it's worth it.
Yeah. Did it feel like 70 hours for you? Like, how long was, do you recall roughly what yours was?
I think I was probably around the 80-ish hour, 70 to 80-hour mark, I want to say. I don't exactly remember.
Yeah.
Because I also do a lot of grinding in these games, so I don't know. That inflates it a bit, but once I figured out my infinite combo, then I just literally wrecked every boss at the end. It's like, oh, okay, it's Emma's turn. Let's do this Reen Popular Order. Let's just keep spamming these attacks and replenishing MP and just keep it going. And then everyone dies. Even the final boss.
I felt like the pacing was good. Like, it wasn't, I don't recall at any point where I was like, oh man, why, like, we need to get on with this. Like, it just felt fun the entire time to me.
I mean, I want to ask Scott a question in a minute. I just want to respond to what you just said, David, about the pacing. I think that it does that same thing of, like, here's your downtime to do your side quests or to you know, bond with your teammates and you know, see the, you know, the kind of character interactions. And then we'll go do the main story. Like, I feel like that's been a kind of hallmark of this series, of that kind of division of tasks or activities in the game is very nice. I think it lends itself well to telling the story in an effective way. Scott, I wanted to ask if there's other games, you know, that are lengthy like this that you really enjoyed, or you felt was worth the time investment, like, because 70 hours does feel like a long time, and maybe even more to me now. But other games you've played that you can think of, like, top of mind, that are really long, like this one, where you know is like, oh, it's totally worth that investment?
Persona 5.
Yeah, I think that's
Persona 5. Persona 5.
That would have been my answer too. That 100 hours didn't feel like 100 hours, but it was a wonderful 100 hours.
Yeah.
I'd also say that about Xenoblade 2. Like, I put 120 hours into that, and it didn't feel like 120, but it was it was pretty awesome. But
yep, Xenoblade games also right up there.
But I feel like we're crazy, though. In a certain, like, how many people play 120 hours and be like, yeah, it was fun, it was nothing? Like, you know, like,
I guess if you're an RPG fan, you can have to be.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think for most RPGs, a 40 to 50 hour mark is good. I think that's what, like, a good RPG should strive for. But if an RPG is to such a high quality that feels like it needs to be 70 hours, 80 hours, in Persona's case, 100 hours, it's like, go for it. As long as it's a game worth it and keeps me going for those 80-100 hours, then I'm all for it. But I'm also perfectly fine with a game like a Bravely Default 2, which might take 40 to 50 hours. I think I'm just about at the 50-hour mark myself at that, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I don't think every RPG needs to be 70 hours. I don't think every RPG should. But the ones that can pull it off, I think I'm 100% behind.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer. I think that It does depend on the game, depends on the content, all the things you can do in there, how much grinding is required, what kind of side quests and mini games there are. Like, there's a fair amount of variety to these Cold Steel games in terms of, like, you know, whether it's just, you know, going to do side quests and you're not doing combat, you're just kind of like running from place to place, whether you want to do the fishing, whether you want to in Cold Steel 4, whether you want to do all the trials chests. Like, they've added some neat things to kind of extend the gameplay out, which can test you in different ways. So I finished my completion time to get the true ending credits was 3904. And I had the max speed option on at all times, more or less, probably 95% of the game. Now, David, you said in the notes skipping side quests. I didn't skip any side quests, actually, and maybe some of the hidden ones I missed. But every side quest that was listed, and even some that weren't, I did do them all. And I got to whatever the max rank is for your Thor's rating, what is the rating that you get? It goes up to like 3.
Your class rating? Your
class rank or something like that, or class rating. I got to the highest one. I think it's 300. You need 310 AP. I got 311. If I had lost the last Vantage Masters game I played, I wouldn't have got, I think I would have missed out on 2 AP and not gotten the max. I would have been so choked. But I did get that, and I guess you get some special accessories for that. The problem is in the Switch version, and I mentioned this in my review, there's no achievements. And so a game like this, where there's so much to do and so much to complete, it is kind of a downer that you don't really get rewarded, you don't get that dopamine hit as much on the Switch version because it doesn't have an achievement system built in. So that's a little unfortunate, but 70 hours can be too long. I don't think it's too long here. I think that these games, there's just so much going on and so many characters that it makes sense for the whole adventure to be a little bit longer.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going.
Well, as we talk about the future, it's time to talk about the past. And for last call, we are taking a look at different ways that perhaps Nihon Falcom can make Legends of Heroes more accessible. Because, like we talked about with Trails of Cold Steel 4, there's a lot of nuance, a lot of details that people may not quite get when they're playing, stuff that they miss, like trying to go back and get all the details from the Sky and Crossbell series. And we've talked about just how difficult it is to even go, like, to track down the games. Like, even people who have the drive to play all these hundreds of hours of games, it's not easy finding them, especially now that the PS Vita is gone. And I've always said, like, I don't understand how this isn't one of the most popular series ever. Like, it seems like it should be on par with something like Final Fantasy or Persona, how well written it is, how the characters develop. And like, the only thing I keep coming back to is that because it's such a long running series, I think most people just feel like they don't want to come in halfway through a story. And then they look at all these different games and like, well, if I'm not going to play them all, then, you know, why get into it now? And I think people get deprived of that. Like, they're depriving themselves of joy, I guess is what I would say. So for last call, I was curious what kind of ideas everyone had to try to maybe get more people to give this series a try.
Yeah, you better start with Scott, because his thinking is exactly what I want to say right now. Like, I think it's the definitive answer. Scott, why don't you go ahead?
I think it's just ports. We need ports on modern systems. We know that overseas they're going to be getting Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2 on the Switch. We know that's coming this year. There's been no word of XC doing that in the States. Same with no word on the enhanced PS4 ports of Trails in the Sky or Trails from Zero and Trails to Azure. There's been no mention of those games, which exist in other regions, releasing on getting localizations. I think that is the biggest thing we can do. I'm curious how they're going to try and tell the Trails of Cold Steel series in the anime they recently announced.
I heard that anime has nothing to do with the story. I read. It's like its own story.
I would almost rather have them do that than try and retell the entire Cold Steel series.
Yeah.
But no, people need the games. I think the name of Trails of Cold Steel and Legend of Heroes is starting to get out there. I think you have a lot of bigger names starting to talk and sing the praises of this series, and it's getting out there. It's just the older games need to be readily available for people to play on Switch, on PS4. On Xbox. And I think that's the biggest thing that it needs right now.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with the quality of these games. Anyone who's played any of them, you know, recognizes that these are, you know, top-notch RPGs with really solid writing, nice voice acting, you know, interesting combat, world that you want to explore and get to know. I think the reason people haven't gone into it as well is because, like, as soon as you try to get into it, or you look in a store and you try to find, like, okay, are all the games available in this one place? And really, the only place they're all available is on Steam. And I get it that people like playing games on PC, but you also want to see these versions of these games on, yeah, like Scott said, PlayStation, Switch, Xbox. Why, when I went to go play Trails in the Sky, the first game I bought played on my Vita, or it's a PSP port or a PSP version of the game, and then the second one is also available on to purchase on Vita, but the third one wasn't, and I kind of got dissuaded from playing two because I knew I couldn't play the third one in the same place, and I wonder if there's people who maybe stay away from Trails of Cold Steel, Nintendo fans or Switch players, because they're only going to be able to play 3 and now 4 there rather than 1 and 2. And yeah, PlayStation, that's good. PlayStation 4, you can play 1, 2, 3, and 4 now. But what if you want to play the Trails in the Sky games or the Crossbell games? You can't play them there. You'll have to, you know, download some kind of patch, like, you know, maybe get them on Steam, but you have to download a patch to get, you know, get the English text in them. Like, it's so hard to be a big fan and play all these games and really get that, all those payoffs we talked about, because you have to go to all these different platforms to do that, or you have to play the games in a way that maybe you don't want to, and that's a shame. So yeah, I'm all for more ports, more accessibility of the series, more visibility. These are fantastic games, and you know, we're one podcast, we're one Discord channel, and we can only shout from so many rooftops about how good these games are, and Dave is doing yeoman's work about that. But really, it's up to, yeah, Xseed and Falcom, and if they can, you know, work with other teams to get these games in more places, I'm all for that. But that, yeah, I agree. It's just a matter of the titles being available on the systems people want to play them.
I really don't understand. Like, I get that it costs money to do these ports, but at this point, like, the trilogy, the Skies trilogy is on Steam. The Cold Steel trilogy is going to be on Steam. Like, I think April 9th is when the PC version comes out too. So basically, both of those series themselves are localized and on Steam. So why can't they be ported, like, to Switch and PS4, I can't imagine, like, you'd think this would be something perfect for Xbox Game Pass as well, where they're like, hey, you know, everyone complains that there's not enough JRPGs on Xbox, we just bought all the Nihon Falcom games. Like, it boggles my mind why that hasn't happened yet, but just to get those particular Steam games onto Switch and PS4 doesn't seem like it's that unrealistic. Like, you're telling me that the money that it would cost to pay someone just to port those games as is, like, you don't have to remaster or upscale or anything. Like, you just take them as is, stick them on there. Like, you can't tell me you're not going to make that money back. It seems implausible to me. So I can understand maybe the Crossbell might be a bit tougher because they don't have like official localizations. I don't know if they just want to give GeoFront some money and borrow those, but I mean, I don't see much of an excuse why they can't put Sky and the full series, Cold Steel series, especially, like we mentioned, the Nihon Falcom is putting the Japanese versions on Switch of Cold Steel 1 and 2, so it doesn't seem like it should be that far off for Xseed to get off their duffs, I guess, and get that done. So yeah, I agree with both of you on that's probably the most realistic and probably the best way to get people into the series. But I'm going to go off the board a little bit with something that probably will never happen in a million years. But, you know, in some dream, in some alternate dimension, maybe it's possible. Some kind of, I know there's probably people out there that look at the Trails in the Sky and maybe Trails of Zero and Azure and think, it's a little too retro for me, or maybe people think it's a little too old, or there's no voice acting, so I'm not going to bother, or something like that. So for those naysayers, I say, Falcom and NAS, get on doing some kind of new game where they do almost like a visual novel style, where maybe they do the Skies trilogy as like one game, and it's like all three combined, and it's more of just like, here's the story. We're gonna cut the combat out, so that we can kind of get you through the story real quick, and just introduce you to all the characters, just get immersed, you know, soak in the lore, get involved. Almost something like I got inspiration from Square, even though it's going to be on mobile devices, the Ever Crisis for Final Fantasy VII, where they're going to kind of accumulate or put all together like all the different Final Fantasy VII stories into like one timeline. I think that's a pretty neat idea, and it's something that I'd love to see Legend of Heroes maybe take on one day.
I think when you consider that Trails in the Sky SC second chapter had more text in it than all of the Lord of the Rings series books put together.
Yeah.
I think that's the idea of, I don't know how they could condense things. Like, that's the biggest thing. It's like, trying to condense all this would be a massive undertaking. Like, to do something like that. Now, I think it's a good idea, but it's just like, holy crap. So much of it's lore-based. How do you compress it?
Well, the only idea I had was to take out the combat, even though that's like half the fun. But just to kind of get people into the lore, I guess. I suppose the other thing that people can do if they're so encouraged or motivated is, I guess there's probably tons of like YouTube videos that you could get, like where they have, I don't know, summaries or whatever. But even then, I feel like it's still depriving yourself of a really good experience. Like to me, like whenever people talk about like what's the best game you haven't played, I think Trails in the Sky is probably like, that trilogy is probably going to be the top of most people's lists, or should be anyway, of like, if you haven't played this is probably the best thing that you haven't played. Well, Jordan, if we don't cut it off here, I feel like we could probably go on for hours, so I don't, might be a good time.
We'll just keep complaining about all the Legend of Heroes games that aren't on Switch and PS5. So,
well, we could be up for days if you want me to get out all my grievances out in the air about that topic.
No. Yeah, so it's probably as good a time as any to wrap up. Thanks everybody for listening to our discussion of Cold Steel 4 and the Legend of Heroes series. Dave is always thrilled when we get to do an episode on his favorite games. I know he had this one penciled in for the release of the game on Switch specifically. David said it's coming to PC on the 9th as well.
Yeah, it's I saw something. Pretty sure April 9th is the PC release as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Switch and PC releases on the same day.
Yeah. So that's something to look forward to for sure. I'm. Can say that my review will be posted before the time of this, when this recording goes live, so you can check that out on Nintendo World Report. Got a video as well. Like I said, I literally just finished the game and the review this morning, so I'm going to be editing the video tonight. Obviously, want to thank Scott for joining us. Scott, do you want to plug your stuff? Where can people find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at SolidSnake120. You can also find me writing the occasional things over at irrationalpassions.com, and of course you can find me on my own RPG podcast, RPG University, which releases bi-weekly. The most recent episode is actually with Michael Hyam from GameSpot, where we talked about Cold Steel 1. So very, very
topical.
But yes, that I know. New episodes are every other Thursday and on the first of the month. You can find it on all your preferred podcast services, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, Google Play, all that jazz.
Are you at liberty to discuss upcoming episodes, or you generally keep those tight to the vest?
No, yeah. I'll be doing a near episode soon, going to be recording that. I'm going to be talking with one of the senior content creators or lead content managers over at D&D Beyond coming up. I have an episode on Kingdom Hearts with Jonathan Dornbush from IGN. That will be in the next episode. Lots of good stuff coming.
Nice. Sounds good. Yeah, I definitely want to check out the Nier one, because I know Dave and I are both very excited for Nier Replicant coming out later this month. And The deluge of RPGs that is going to consume our lives continues, I suppose. But I think, Scott, you've hit on something of the bi-weekly format is probably the best way to survive playing these longer games and having nice chats about them. But we try to do some theme episodes in the middle. And I know David, we're talking about romance and marriage in games, I think, next week. Is that right?
I think that's going to be next week. Coming up for sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, so stay tuned for that coming next week. David, any reviews for the Thirsty Mage or videos you've got in the works that you're able to talk about?
Yeah, we've got, by the time this comes up, we'll have a review. I'm trying to remember what the game's name was. Oh, man. Don't Give Up, A Cynical Tale. That should be on the website by the time this is active. And I played the game on Switch, or Quote Seal 4 on Switch as well, so I'm going to do a write-up about that which will be on the website as well. And I don't know if I want to particularly say what's going to be in the review, but it's you can check that out to kind of go with our episode tonight.
Yeah, sounds good. So lots of Cold Steel stuff in addition to the podcast reviews. Check out Scott's podcast when you get a chance. It's available like our podcast is, kind of wherever you're downloading podcasts from. Scott, thanks again for coming on. We'll have to do this again. You know, maybe we'll pop into the RPG University at some point as well. That'd be fun. Good to have guests to the Mage and, hearing different voices from people that are as passionate about this genre as we are. So that was a lot of fun. I think that'll do it for today. So thanks everyone for listening again. You know where to find us. You know, leave us a review on your podcast catcher. That would help with visibility. We'd love that, and it's to interact with you. And we've got a Discord channel that's always buzzing and always talking about the games we're playing upcoming. And there's again always dedicated Legend of Heroes discussion there too. So if you enjoyed hearing about the episode, I'm sure you'd have a great time on the Discord too. So that's it though. Everyone has a good night, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.